You're listening to Becker Broadcast Systems.
This is what makes time travel possible.
Broadcasting worldwide at WBCQ.com.
100% satisfaction guarantee.
Turn on that radio and back here. The cops ain't likely to catch up with us, not tonight. So we can all be quiet and peaceable and listen to the music.
I wonder if it'd be louder with bigger wires.
Welcome to This Week in Amateur Radio International, your amateur radio news magazine of the air, edition number 61, with a release date of March 25th, 2006.
My, what a thumping good read!
Once again, our reputation precedes us.
KXKVI is located on Highway 601, just 6 miles south of Cotterfield, where the supermarkets meet the people, serving all of Los Feliz County in sunny southern Cal. KXKVI is brought to you, good people, at 1820-1820 on your radio dial.
Cal, get Al and tell him to come in here quick.
What's wrong?
Look at that dial. That needle has just dropped about 10 points.
What is it?
The power output. We're broadcasting on just about half.
What's he doing with that?
He's fooling around with the transmitter. I'd better tell Alan.
When did it start?
A couple of minutes ago.
Yeah, it's way over reach.
He said something about welcoming new listeners in Canada.
Told him not to turn up the power.
Here are the stories making news this week in amateur radio.
Amateur radio is poised to stay within the FCC Wireless Telecommunications Bureau. Mississippi becomes the 22nd state to adopt the PRB1 statute. The ARRL kicks off its new Hello Public Relations campaign to promote amateur radio. New Mexico funds a new statewide emergency communications network that includes amateur radio. Sony prepares to close its cathode ray tube manufacturing facility. Amateur radio emergency services spring into action during Midwest tornadoes. A wind-damaged 82-year-old radio tower in Kansas will be brought down. And we'll take a close-up look at the new ARRL's Hello campaign with the man who had the original idea.
These stories come to you in a moment, along with this week's special features. From This Week in Tech, Leo Laporte will be here with all the latest technology news and commentary. Bill Barron, N2FNH, will be here with another Random Access Thought. And this week, we feature more musings with Will Rogers, W4WLR. That's all straight ahead on today's exciting edition of This Week in Amateur Radio International.
All the latest amateur radio news and features will begin right after this important message.
Hey, are you sure that's the station we always listen to?
Yes, positive.
Well, they've sure gone religious. I better find us a time signal or something.
You think you know what radio is, but there is a radio you may not have yet discovered. Amateur radio, or as it is often called, ham radio. You can talk to the world.
Hey, Yoshi, you're my first contact with Japan.
Help when disasters strike.
The Hurricane Emergency Net is now open for priority traffic.
Or make friends worlds away.
G'day, mate. Beautiful day here out in Australia. I tell you what, the waves are beautiful.
Say hello to the world via amateur radio. The ARRL, the National Organization for Amateur Radio, can teach you how. Visit helloradio.org and say hello to ham radio.
Before there was Xbox, there was radio.
Radio.
Before there were computers, there was radio.
Radio.
Before there were mobile phones, there was radio.
Radio.
Help bring the kids back to amateur radio. Digicast.fm and Digitronics raises money for the Omonics Fund, which supports youth projects in amateur radio worldwide through grants of cash and equipment. We see the future in the youth, so help bring the kids back into amateur radio by tuning in at www.digicast.fm.
Come on, it's for the kids.
Reporting from our news bureau in New Brunswick, Canada, I am Brent Taylor, VE1JH.
And reporting from our Northeast News Bureau in New York City, I'm Mark Phillips, G7LTT.
30 minutes of solid amateur radio news begins now.
The FCC approved a proposal March 17 to create a new Public Safety and Homeland Security Bureau that would assume some functions now under the umbrella of the Wireless Telecommunications Bureau. With more on this breaking story, here is Rick Lindquist, N1RL.
It appears that the amateur radio service, now within the Wireless Bureau's Public Safety and Critical Infrastructure Division, headed by Michael Wilhelm, WS6BR, will remain within the Wireless Bureau, according to Anthony Dale, acting head of the FCC's Office of Managing Directors.
The critical infrastructure piece, which that's things like taxi cabs, amateur radio, like chemical plants, you know, all that type
of
thing.
All the power plants.
Right. Those are not public safety specific functions. The plan is to keep those in the Wireless Bureau.
Creation of the new bureau was a topic of some discussion during a meeting earlier this month of the ARRL Executive Committee. With the complete details of the reorganization still uncertain, the League is adopting a wait-and-see attitude. An official document spelling out just which functions and services will end up where has not yet been made public, and even Dale did not appear to be entirely clear on specifics. He and others stressed that some Public Safety and Homeland Security Bureau functions may overlap those of other bureaus. The FCC said the changes are subject to congressional notification before they become effective. In addition, the commission must secure approval from at least one labor union because of issues affecting the FCC workforce. The last changes affecting the functions of the Wireless Bureau occurred in 2003. Moving some of the Wireless Bureau's current responsibilities to the new bureau could speed the process of moving amateur radio-related proceedings through the commission. The new bureau would be the seventh within the FCC. The commission voted unanimously to approve its creation. Reporting from ARRL headquarters in Newington, Connecticut, I'm Rick Lindquist, N1RL.
The PS&HSB will have three divisions: policy, public communications outreach and operations, and communication systems analysis. In addition, the bureau will have a front office consisting of senior leadership management and staff. FCC Commissioner Michael Kopp said the proposed reorganization goes beyond reshuffling of the bureaucracy. He expressed the hope that the creation of the new Public Safety and Homeland Security Bureau would be viewed as the first step in putting the FCC out front, where it long should have been, in providing communication security for all Americans in this dangerous age.
After several earlier tries, Mississippi this week became the 22nd state to revise its statutes to incorporate the language of the limited federal preemption known as PRB1. Mississippi Governor Haley Barbour signed the bill March 13th. Reports ARRL Mississippi Section Manager Malcolm Keown, W5XX. Echoing the language of PRB1, the new law calls on localities establishing ordinances regulating amateur placement, screening, or height to reasonably accommodate amateur radio communication. The Mississippi measure also takes note of amateur radio's communication support in emergencies and disasters. This legislation supports the amateur radio service in preparing for and providing emergency communications for the state of Mississippi and local emergency management agencies, the statute reads. The new PRB1 provision became law when Barbour signed it. The new law provides that local land use regulation ordinances involving the placement, screening, or height of amateur radio antenna structures must reasonably accommodate amateur communications and must constitute the minimum practicable regulation to accomplish local authorities' legitimate purposes to address health, safety, welfare, and aesthetic considerations. Under the new law, local authorities will determine the types of reasonable accommodation to be made and the minimum practicable regulation necessary to address these purposes within the parameters of the law. We now have a Mississippi PRB1 law on the books, Keown exulted in a message to Mississippi League members. Keown this week called on his section's members to contact all those involved and thank them for contributing to the success of the PRB1 legislation. Similar bills were introduced this session in the House and Senate, but the House version, HB 736, was the successful measure. The Senate version of PRB1 legislation, SB 2709, passed the full Senate but died in committee in the House. Keown says efforts have been underway since 2001 to get such legislation through the Mississippi legislature. In past years, PRB1 bills have made it through one legislative chamber only to die in committee in the other. A ceremonial signing of the PRB1 legislation will be scheduled after the legislative session ends.
The first components of the ARRL's Hello! Amateur Radio Public Relations campaign are now available. For more details on how the League plans to put a new inviting face on amateur radio, we go to League Headquarters and Rick Lindquist, N1RL, from the ARRL Audio News.
ARRL Media and Public Relations Manager Alan Pitts, W1AGP, who conceived the campaign and is its principal headquarters contact, says the Hello campaign will give hams the tools they need to reach out to non-hams and influence their perception of ham radio. The Hello campaign is aimed at recasting amateur radio in the light of the 21st century and focus on its universal appeal.
The basic philosophy of Hello is to try and give amateur radio a personality that's friendly, open, people that you would kind of like to get to meet and know, and hopefully maybe get interested in amateur radio itself.
Tools available on the distinctive Hello website, www.hello-radio.org, include radio and TV public service announcements. Bumper stickers and pins, among other things, will be available at Dayton Hamvention and other conventions, and there will be some surprises throughout the year, Pitt says. The coordinated campaign will set what he calls a positive, upbeat tone that highlights the international capabilities of amateur radio. And while the National Hello campaign can bring curious people into contact with ham radio groups, it'll be up to local radio amateurs to make them truly welcome.
We can provide the tools, but every ham is a PIO. This is the campaign that people have been asking for. This is the campaign that hams have said that they wanted. Here it is. Let's do the best we can with it. Let's make it happen.
Full details on the Hello campaign, plus a pullout copy of the Hello brochure, are available in the April issue of QST. Email hello at arrl.org. For more information. Reporting from ARRL headquarters in Newington, Connecticut, I'm Rick Lindquist, N1RL.
The state of New Mexico's Governor Bill Richardson signed a bill on Thursday, March 16th, that creates a statewide emergency communications network. The new bill also earmarks an impressive $500,000 to fund amateur radio's participation in the soon-to-be-built network. State Representative Tom Anderson of Bernalillo brought the bill into the 2006 session of the New Mexico Legislature. Anderson, who holds the call sign KB5YSG, said that following Hurricane Katrina, it's been seen just how valuable amateur radio can be in a disaster. He called the funding of the network an investment by New Mexico in the protection of lives, property, and public lands in the event that a catastrophe might hit the state. Preliminary plans call for state-purchased equipment to be installed in strategic locations as an interlinked VHF and UHF voice and data repeater network that will allow communications to be available anywhere in the state when hams are working alongside first responders during disaster situations. In recent years, New Mexico hams have been called out to respond to wildfires in several parts of the state. These firestorms have consumed thousands of acres of valuable timber and watershed while taxing existing ham radio lines of communications to the maximum. The New Mexico Emergency Management Association, State Department of Homeland Director Tim Manning, and many of the state's ham radio groups worked very hard to make sure the emergency network funding made it past Governor Richardson's desk.
Produced by amateurs, for amateurs, and originating from Albany, New York, you're listening to This Week in Amateur Radio.
Sony Electronics has announced that it will be closing its television picture tube factory in San Diego, California, in the not-too-distant future. According to published news reports, the move reflects the sagging fortunes of cathode ray tubes that were once the only way to see television. These old-style sets are quickly being replaced by flat-panel monitors using plasma and LCD display technology that can be hung on a wall. About 400 jobs will be phased out when the plant ceases to manufacture CRTs. Sony will continue to employ about 2,000 people at its San Diego headquarters and continue making the VIO line of personal computers at that facility.
Amateur radio emergency service teams in Missouri this week assisted emergency managers in that state with damage assessment after a huge string of tornadoes swept through the nation's midsection March 12th. 9 people were reported dead in Missouri and 1 in Indiana in the aftermath of the severe weather. Missouri Section Emergency Coordinator Don Moore, KM0R, told ARRL that he and 3 other radio amateurs deployed March 13th as a quick response team to Pettis County, Missouri, just south of Sedalia, along U.S. Route 65 to support the county's Emergency Operations Center. There was some major wind down there, Moore told ARRL. The severe weather damaged or took down utility lines along U.S. Route 65 and elsewhere. The Pettis County Emergency Management Agency requested the ARES call-up, 9 ARES members ultimately activated to help 7 damage assessment teams. ARES stood down later the same day. Ares handled minimal voice traffic, Moore said. While the Ares group was prepared to pass damage assessments to the EOC via WinLink 2000, that turned out not to be necessary. The Ares team did communicate with the Missouri Emergency Management Agency to demonstrate WinLink from the field, he added. Missouri appears to have been the state hardest hit by the weekend storms, which generated hail said to have been the size of golf balls. Damage in the Show Me State stretched from west to east, with houses reportedly destroyed along a 20-mile path south of St. Louis. Tornadoes also struck Kansas, where the University of Kansas canceled classes March 13th due to safety concerns. The school, located in Lawrence, reportedly suffered damage to nearly two-thirds of its buildings, but no serious injuries were reported. Salvation Army Team Emergency Radio Network members were requested to deploy the Saturn mobile generator trailer when the storms knocked out power in Douglas County, Kansas. In Arkansas, Section Manager David Morris, K5UZ, reports Franklin County Ares Races and Sebastian County Races activated Skywarn nets over the weekend. Northwest Arkansas was hammered late last night with quite a bit of damage in Centerton, he told ARRL March 13th. He reported several people injured and considerable property damage. In Illinois, Section Manager Sharon Harlan, N5SH, noted that severe storms rolled across her state March 12th. Houses and businesses throughout the capital city of Springfield were damaged or destroyed, and roads into the city had to be closed. The violent weather developed from a line of thunderstorms that stretched from the southern plains and into the Ohio Valley. Twisters also hit parts of Oklahoma.
The University of Kansas next week will dismantle an 82-year-old radio tower that broadcast the university's first radio station and presently serves the students' radio station KJHK, officials said today. University Fire Marshal and Special Projects Manager for Design and Construction Management Bob Rumbach said high winds slammed a 10-by-30-foot section of roof from the adjacent Art and Design building into the lower midsection of the self-supporting steel tower located behind Marvin Hall, bending some of the supports. The age of the tower does not make it conducive to repair, Rumbach said. KJHK's communication cable on the tower was also hit squarely by the roof section. Because of the kink in the cable, KJHK has only been able to operate at half its normal 2,900-watt power since the storm. The radio station was off the air for 2 days after the storm because of the power outage. KJHK's antenna will be relocated to the Kansas Public Radio Tower on the West Campus. During the transition, KJHK will be off the air and will temporarily broadcast only through its website starting midnight on March 27th. Two large cranes will be brought to the campus on Tuesday. It will take workers 2 to 4 days to take the tower apart at an estimated cost of $25,000, Rumbach said. The 185-foot tower was built in 1924 to broadcast KU's first radio station, KFKU, which began transmitting December 15, 1924, with a concert by the KU band and a speech by Chancellor Ernest Lindley. KJHK, which began as a student-run radio station in the Journalism School and is now operated by the KU Memorial Union Corps, has had its antenna on the Marvin Hall Tower since its inception in 1975.
And now with news from the Radio Amateurs of Canada, here is Rick Volpatti, VE7CJQ, in Kelowna, British Columbia.
QST, QST, QST. The following is a bulletin for all radio amateurs from VE7 Charlie Juliet, Quebec, a bulletin relay station delivering news of interest for all Canadian radio amateurs. The RAC Board of Directors has authorized the formation of an advisory committee under the leadership of Midwest Director B.J. Madsen, Victor Echo 5 Foxtrot X-Ray, to examine whether Industry Canada should be asked to institute a new entry-level certificate for the amateur radio service in Canada. The committee is considering the very successful entry-level foundation license that has been implemented in the UK and Australia to encourage youth to take an interest in science and radio and to promote growth in amateur radio, and will seek input from Canadian radio amateurs as what should be done in Canada. The full article can be found on www.rac.ca, the RAC website, or in your latest copy of TCA magazine. The 19th International Marconi Day takes place on April 22nd, organized by the Cornish Radio Amateur Club over in the UK. The event celebrates the life of the man widely credited with being the father of radio. Although International Marconi Day is not a contest, awards will be made available to stations that operate from a site that either used Marconi equipment prior to his death in 1937 or where Marconi carried out experiments during his lifetime. In DX, word that W7YW is operating Papa 40 Tango Whiskey from Aruba until March 24th. He plans to be active on all bands, including
including single sideband RTTY and CW, from the P40L contest station. Delta Lima 3 Kilo Whiskey Radio and Delta Lima 3 Kilo Whiskey Foxtrot will be active portable Charlie Tango 3 from Madeira Islands until March 23rd. Activity will be mostly on CW and the work bands. Also, United Radio 8 United Charlie will be using the special call sign Echo Mike 1 United Charlie from the Ukrainian Antarctic DX Club until February 2007. His activity will be on CW single sideband and some other popular digital modes. And keep an ear open for United Alpha 3 Fox Delta X-Ray and RA3 AUM, who will be active from Azerbaijan as 4 Juliet 0DX and 4 Juliet 0 Alpha United Mexico. The duo will be operational between March 17th and 27th on 80 through 10 meters on single sideband and CW. Some 160-meter operation is also a possibility. QSL, all three of these operations, is directed on the air. For those listeners in central and southern Alberta, the Calgary and area flea market is not far away. Eastside City Church, 1320 Abbeydale Drive in Calgary on Saturday, May 13th. At the usual location, it goes from 10 until 2. Admission is $3 and tables are $5. For more details, you can contact Tim, VE6 Bravo Zulu, at VE6BZ at TELUS.net. That's the bulletin service for today. Bulletin information gathered with the help of many sources, including RAC, AR Newsline, QRZ.com, and QRZ.ca. Your bulletin station, VE7 Charlie, Juliet, Quebec. Rick in Kelowna, British Columbia.
From the United States of America, you're listening to Amateur Radio's premier news magazine of the air, This Week in Amateur Radio International.
Oh, man. What a rotten day. Ah, well, at least I can listen to some classical music on my Victrola.
Und der Haie Fisch, der hat Zähne, und die trägt er im Gesicht, im Gesicht, im Gesicht.
What the? Holy crap.
Wow, Dad. I don't think that record is going to skip anymore.
Yeah, I think you're right.
No matter how advanced the technology, the record will always skip. That's the subject of the next Random Access Thought, coming up in just a few minutes, right here, on This Week in Amateur Radio.
Wachte auf und war geschändet. Mäcki, welches war dein Paradies?
WBCQ!
Still
This Week at Amateur Radio International, where we turn with a look at technology news with Leah Laporte, more musings with Will Rogers, W4WLR, and a lot more stuff right after these important messages.
But if I should lose your love, dear, I don't know what I'll do. For I know I'll never find another you. Another you. Another you.
Before there was Xbox, there was radio. Before there were computers, there was radio. Before there were mobile phones, there was radio. Help bring the kids back to amateur radio. Digicast.fm and Digitronics raises money for the Harmonics Fund, which supports youth projects in amateur radio worldwide through grants of cash and equipment. We see the future in the youth, so help bring the kids back into amateur radio by tuning in at www.digicast.fm.
Come on, it's for the kids.
Over. The trails are over here. What?
Are you being victimized by boring, generic radio? Then contact the Prometheus Radio Project for information on community FM stations, media advocacy, FCC policy, and any other general inquiries. Call 215-727-9620 or on the web at prometheusradio.org. Remember, a radio station in your hands is worth 200 channels full of mush.
You think you know what radio is, but there is a radio you may not have yet discovered. Amateur radio, or as it is often called, ham radio. You can talk to the world.
Hey, Yoshi, you're my first contact with Japan.
Help when disasters strike.
The hurricane emergency net is now open for priority traffic.
Or make friends worlds away.
G'day, mate. Beautiful day here out in Australia. I tell you what, the waves are
Say hello to the world via amateur radio. The ARRL, the National Organization for Amateur Radio, can teach you how. Visit helloradio.org and say hello to ham radio.
The time is now 2 a.m. in Bukava, Belgian Congo, the home of the Jungle Telegraph. We'd like to say hello to Ungat Unga Ump and Mrs. Ump and all the boys up at the transmitter.
And now with the latest technology news and commentary from Petaluma, California. This Week in Amateur Radio is proud to present Leo Laporte.
Amazing story. AOL. What's happening with America Online is they don't want anybody to be on dial-up anymore, very simply. And they even say this. They've raised their dial-up price starting March 9th to $25.90 a month. $26 a month for dial-up. For dial-up. That's the same as they charge for broadband. And I think it's very clear. Now, I should say that's the same they charge for broadband, but of course you'd have to pay a broadband service provider in addition to AOL. I think it's very clear that they don't want any more modems. They want to get rid of those dial-up modems. And one way to do it is just price it so high. But see, this is the sad thing about this. They can price it as high as they want. A lot of AOL users aren't paying attention and will and I guess maybe they're a little cynical. Maybe that's what they're saying too to themselves is, well, if they're too stupid to change, I guess we'll take their money. But that's so cynical. $26 a month for dial-up. I mean, how can they do that with a straight face? That's just appalling. And, you know, there's a lot of people who will continue to pay it, just thinking, either not knowing any better, or I don't know what. It just doesn't, it's kind of appalling. And I imagine that, you know, I mean, one of the things that AOL is doing right now, one of the things they'd like to change is, they've even said this. They say we don't want to be the walled garden anymore. They realize there's more money to be made as a content provider out there on the real internet. They look at people like Google and they go, well, maybe that's a better way to go. They'd love to be an advertising agency like Google. They'd love to be a content provider like Yahoo. And these are all these other guys are doing better than AOL is. And so they're saying, well, maybe we should change our business model. So I think AOL is moving towards getting out of the business of being an internet service provider, which, as you know, is a killer business. The margins are tiny. And how are you going to compete against companies like DSL Extreme and SBC Yahoo are offering, you know, internet, high speed internet for well under $20? You can't. Get out of that business is what AOL's saying. get into the same business Yahoo and Google are in, providing content, selling ads, that kind of thing. So I think that's what's happening in America Online. Meanwhile, if you know anybody, if you have any friends who are kind of, you know, unsophisticated, you might, and they're on AOL, you might mention to them that there are many cheaper choices than AOL, like anybody else. You don't have to be on AOL dial-up. I got an email from John and Gail, who said, how do I stop or block Google from looking into my PC? Google doesn't look into your PC unless, you know, you have to do a number of steps. You download the new Google desktop search, and if you enable the search between computers, that's when Google starts indexing your computer, including all your document files, and then uploads the result of that index to its servers. So it won't do that. Just, you know, using Google is safe. I don't want to give you a misapprehension. Just using Google as a search engine is safe. There's no privacy threat there. No more than going to any other website. If you sign up for an account on Google, as I do, I use the Google homepage, google.com/IG. And then I have an account. I have a unique user ID with Google. Now that gives me the ability to customize that page. Of course, that's the carrot. They hand you, you know, oh, look, you can customize a page. The disadvantage is now they can track you. So, for instance, one of the features on the page is my search history. It has all the Google searches I've done, you know, or some of them. And so I can go back. Now, that's a nice feature, isn't it? A9 had that feature, the Amazon search that was based on Google. So you could, you know, if you repeat searches very easily. Oh, that's nice. Well, it also means that Google is keeping track of what I'm looking at and matching it to my unique user ID, which means I would expect that my Google ads would be more tailored to what I've been looking at. I don't think that's a bad thing. In fact, research shows ads are much more tolerated if they're advertisements for things we're interested in. The real problem with ads is they're advertising stuff we don't care about. But people don't seem to mind ads so much, or at all, if they're advertising something that we're in the market for. We pay attention, we listen, and the ads work better, everybody's happier, and that's what Google's business model is. So to answer your question, John, don't worry, Google is not looking at the files on your PC unless you download the Google desktop search and turn on search across desktops. You don't do that, you okay. Don't have to worry, I think. One of the things I promised to talk about is the exploits. And there are three exploits now on Macintosh in rapid order. I think the hacker community finally has set up and taken notice. Apple's been very careful never to say publicly, oh, we're safer, we're more secure than Windows. Many people, including myself, have always thought, well, gee, Apple really could really, this would be a good time for Apple to promote the fact that there are no viruses on OS X. But I think they were wise, because maybe they realized that doing so would attract attention. And if somebody has attracted attention, the hackers are pursuing Windows, or OS X, I should say. However, it's not time to freak out. First of all, there are 33,000 Windows viruses. There are three OS X viruses, and none of them are significant, in my opinion. I take it back. One is significant. Two of them are minor. The Oompa Loompa Trojan fewer than 50 people have gotten it. It's very difficult to spread. It doesn't spread over the internet, only spreads over a local area network. It's very likely it was written as a proof of concept rather than an attempt to infect anybody. But, it does remind us all that you shouldn't be running as administrator. If you don't run as administrator on a Mac, you won't get this. You can't get this. It's only if you run it as administrator. And it does also show up a weakness in the way Apple has designed some things, a weakness which is easily fixed. There is a fix. There's an Oompa Loompa fix that essentially locks the permissions on a folder to prevent this infection as well. And that would probably be worth installing that. Something a little more serious that I worry a little bit more about is the fact that Safari will automatically execute a program on download if you don't tell it not to. Now, Apple changed the default behavior of Safari. This is actually really an older problem that there's a vested interest, frankly, in people don't like it when you go around saying, oh, we don't have any viruses. So people are anxious to prove, oh, you've got viruses. It is possible to use Safari to go to a malicious website and download a file, and the file will automatically execute upon open. That's because Safari has in it, that's the browser on OS X, Safari has in it the ability to automatically run a program after download. It's in right in the preferences under the general tab, open, quote, safe files after downloading. Safe files, says Apple, include movies, pictures, sounds, PDF, and other text documents. Well, it turns out that it will also run shell scripts. Now, that's very dangerous. That box should be unchecked. It is by default now on OS X, but if you have an older installation or, you know, you've been upgrading, it may still be checked. So if you use Safari, and actually I use Firefox on OS X as well, but if you use Safari, uncheck that box. Open safe files after downloading. Windows does the same thing. Internet Explorer does the same thing. When it sees a zip file, it will unzip it. In general, that is not a good behavior. You want to have to manually open this stuff. So just uncheck that box, and then you won't be bugged by this Safari automatic execution issue. If even if you download the file, you open it up, and you see in there that there is a... of course, if you act stupidly on the net, anything can happen to you. So if you go to a site that is maybe a little sketch, and you download a file, and you say, oh, what's this, and you run the program, sorry, can't help you. You can get infected. This is just to prevent it from happening to somebody who's just not paying attention, or it shouldn't happen automatically, let's put it that way. So just uncheck that box. You open Safari, you go to the preferences, go to the general tab, make sure the box that says open safe files after downloading is unchecked. Mine is unchecked. Apple's made it unchecked for some time, and the reason is there was an exploit that did this with widgets, and it raised everybody's awareness. It wasn't malicious. In fact, it was designed to tell people, look, you see, this is a problem. Apple thinks too many files are safe. So you turn that off, and Apple turned it off, and it's off by default, but just in case you've turned it on. Does this mean that OS X is insecure, or no? Is it close to as insecure as Windows? No, it's not even in the league of Windows. But it does mean, and I think this is very important, that Mac users need to pay attention to security now. I think they always needed to. That's my opinion. But if you were wandering around in a daze saying, oh, I don't have to worry about it, well, you do. You shouldn't be running as administrator. You should pay attention to these things. I'll bring them up whenever they come up. You should uncheck that box in Safari if it's checked. There are lots of other little security issues. For instance, you shouldn't be allowing third-party cookies in your browser. You shouldn't be... by the way, Safari does that right. No other browser I've seen on any platform does that right. Safari, turn off third-party cookies. You might want to turn off third-party images, although that means a lot of images, including on my site, will stop displaying. That just means images that are loaded not from the originating site but from another site. Now, that's where ads come from. I, as many webmasters do, often load images from other servers of mine or even from other sites. So some of the images on my site may disappear if you check that box. But it is certainly that's a safer thing.
Connecting to... the Random Access Thought.
The following program was recorded at 78 revolutions per minute on a 16-inch diameter acetate analog transcription disc. Oh, hello there. The other day, I went down to my local CompUSA and picked up a really neat 512-meg USB flash drive made by SanDisk. I bought this thing so I could have backup copies of all my Random Access Thoughts, files, and sound effects on a static, non-volatile, and non-spinning storage device. Why? Because no matter how advanced the technology currently is, the record will always skip. Remember this. It's a documented scientific postulate. And not just a postulate, it's an axiom, a hardcore fact, a basic universal rule of life. Ever since Thomas Edison invented the wax cylinder recorder at the turn of the previous century, the record has always skipped.
For those of you who were born after 1980 and were not paying attention, you should know that records were analog audio storage devices pressed out of plastic vinyl with the sound inscribed on both sides, each side with a single spiraling groove
that tracked from the outside inward toward the center of the disk. There were a number of rotating speeds involved, 33 and a third revolutions per minute for the so-called long play album, and 45 RPM for the smaller one song per side disc. Earlier acetate recordings, shellac transcriptions, and motion picture Vitaphone discs manufactured before the mid-1950s literally flew along at 78 RPM. Playback of these sounds relied solely on a single transducer, actually a comparatively blunt-nosed needle that chiseled its way through the soft vinyl groove. These grooves were translated into sound, either mechanically or electronically, but if the record was scratched or part of the groove damaged, the needle could miss track and play the same segment over and over again. In the vernacular of the moment, we would say, the needle got stuck. And a classic recording might sound something like this.
Oh, is it, Wilma?
It's Charlie, it's Charlie, it's Charlie, it's Charlie, and Irving.
And while records and record players were evolving, so too magnetic tape recorders were under development as well. Open reel-to-reel machines were actually far more dependable, since tape movement was governed by three internal motors which kept tape going at a constant rate of speed, usually expressed in inches per second. The more inches per second, the higher the audio quality. If there was to be a failure, then it would be due to a tape breaking or snapping during playback. With the exception of early acetate-based tapes, this almost never happened. But these monolithic machines with their big aluminum Frankenstein reels and their scary Dr. Cyclops V-O-meters and numerous Earth versus flying saucers knobs and switches, and not to mention the complicated tape threading process, well, this whole business was just not endearing to Mr. and Mrs. John Q. Public. Enter the audio cassette tape recorder. Despite their dollar store quality tape, incredibly slow speed, and super cheap plastic casing, the average man and woman embraced this concept. So small, so easy, so convenient. But it was a common occurrence for audio cassettes to be devoured or eaten by the tape machine itself. Such a consumption of a classic recording
might sound something like this. Oh, is it, Wilma?
It's Charlie and Irving.
Chances were the stored media, all those favorite songs, could not be recovered, and by extension, the same sad story for the jammed video cassette, constructed to the same quality standards. In the early 1980s, something new for the great and washed came along, the audio compact disc. Here, outmoded electromechanical analog methodologies were replaced with contemporary digital transducing technologies where, instead of fragile plastic grooves and a crude Stone Age metal stylus, a filament-thin slice of laser light would interpret a string of micro-sized divots pimpled into the surface of a silvery disc spinning at hundreds of revolutions per minute. The sound was impressive. In fact, some would say, perfect. Perfect. But a critical flaw remained, the spinning disc itself. Should the laser reader miss track, or should there be a smudge or a bit of goo on the disc itself? Well, a classic recording might sound something
like this. Oh, is it, Wilma?
It's Charlie and Irving.
Currently, the personal computer has become, for many people, the home theater, the multimedia center, the catch-all, do-all, one-stop source for all entertainment needs. Hundreds of gigabytes of sound and video can be stored and preserved on a hard drive that can read, write, and buffer at bewildering speeds, all on an unseen internal magnetic disc that spins at hundreds of revolutions per second. There's that little flaw again, that spinning business. Hard drives almost never miss track, but they may skip. And when they do, they may sound something like this. And when they do sound like this, you will hear nothing except this sound because the hard drive has totally failed and cannot even read the software needed just to get up and running. Unless you have backed up your media, you have just lost all of your files. So this gets us back to the flashcard and, by extension, all those neat little MPEG players. So far, so good. I don't know what hidden flaws or failures might be inherent in their design, but for the moment, as long as it does not spin or rotate, the record will not skip. This is Bill Barron, Barron, N to infinity. Disconnecting from... The Random Access Thought.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Musings of Will Rogers, W4WLR, reporting from West Palm Beach, Florida. Well, recently the XYL says I'm up to my armpits in... alligators? No. Boat anchors. Up to my armpits in boat anchors. And, of course, some folks maybe don't remember or don't know what boat anchors are. That's the old tube-type equipment, the old heavy stuff, although a lot of my stuff isn't really all that heavy. But it's tube-type, and it's 35 to 45 to 50 years old, and so it qualifies. A few weeks ago, I was looking on the Internet, and I saw a Heathkit Q-multiplier. And I have a Drake 2B that I don't have a 2BQ for, and I thought to myself, boy, wouldn't it be neat if that Heathkit Q-multiplier would work? But, you know, I just wasn't sure that the Heathkit Q-multiplier was going to be able to do what I needed it to do, that it might not have been tuned for the same IF frequencies or whatever. So what I needed was a manual. Where to get a manual? Where am I going to find a manual on a Saturday night? Well, it wasn't all that difficult. There's a wonderful place on the Internet called the Boat Anchors Manual Archive, BAMA for short, and they have got all kinds of boat anchor manuals. So, lo and behold, they had the manual for the Heathkit Q-multiplier that I was looking at, and so I downloaded it and put it up on the screen and examined the schematic and examined the documentation, and lo and behold, yes, indeed, it did work, and using that, I was also able to figure out how to connect it to the Drake 2B. So now I have a Drake 2B with a fine Heathkit Q multiplier attached to it. Very reasonable, too. So if you have boat anchors, you know, you got to look around for manuals for those things. They don't always come with manuals. Usually they're quite old and the manual has long been separated from the equipment. The quality is perhaps not as good as one you could get if you had the original manual, but it's definitely readable stuff. In fact, they even warn you about it when you first go onto the website. They tell you, hey, look, don't expect these to be high quality. You know, some of them are pretty rough. But again, they are good enough for you to be able to do what you need to do, figure out what tube you need to replace, figure out what you can hook up to what piece of equipment. So it makes it really, really nice. Boat Anchor Manual Archive. If you want to check it out for yourself, point your browser to http://bama.sbc.edu. Now, that site tends to be a little on the busy side, so there is also a mirror that you can reach, and it is available at http://bama.edebris.com/manuals/. And that's Edebris, I guess is how you'd pronounce that, or Edebris. So that's another one you can point it to, and you have to do right-click and save the manual. That's how it works. Some of them are deja vu, some of them are PDF, and you might need to download the plugins for those things if you don't already have them. But, again, it's a free resource. Yep, sometimes it's busy on a weekend and you can't get to it, and it can be a little frustrating. But I've just made it a habit now when I buy a boat anchor, if it doesn't come with a manual, I immediately go to Bama, and I download a manual for it. Sometimes I have the manual before the equipment even gets here. So here's another free resource on the internet that will give you the ability to repair your old boat anchor gear. Wow. Isn't the internet wonderful? Reporting from West Palm Beach, Florida, this is Will Rogers, W4WLR 73. You're listening to This Week in Amateur Radio.
Hi, Mother Radio. What's happening?
Oh, hi, TikTok. I'm just getting ready to kick out our official This Week in Amateur Radio podcast listener email.
You've got mail.
There's a message for you.
Congratulations, Skippy. You've got mail.
You've got mail, baby. Yeah.
You're having new mail in your inbox.
You got mail. Mail is good. I like my mail.
Mailman, got your mail here.
There's a letter in your mailbox.
You've got some mail.
We just got a letter. 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 Wonder who it's from.
End of line.
Wow, that's an impressive email sound.
Yeah, it's a bit much. Bill, M2FNH, made that for me. You know his thing with cockamamie noises. Now, let's see who's been listening to our This Week in Amateur Radio podcasts this week.
Yes, indeed. If you listen to This Week in Amateur Radio via podcast, you too can receive a special This Week in Amateur Radio QSL card. All you need to do is email us a reception report. Tell us what you heard, some of the news stories, and maybe your favorite special feature. And give us an idea of what sort of super high-tech hardware you are using to listen to the program. Then, email us right away at n2fnh@twiar.org. Again, that's n2fnh@twiar.org to receive your official This Week in Amateur Radio QSL card right away.
No, do as you are told.
You tell them, Mom.
Don't call me Mom.
Baba Booey.
End of line.
Sorry, I didn't get that.
And finally this week, we have reported earlier on the new ARRL Ham Radio public relations campaign entitled Hello. It's a campaign that is based on one little word. Our colleagues at the Amateur Radio Newsline caught up with the man that came up with the idea and got a glimpse into the future timeline of the ARRL's new Hello campaign. Mark Abramovich, NT3V, reports.
Alan Pitts, W1AGP, the American Radio Relay League's media and public relations manager, says his vision is simple, getting people to know what amateur radio is and what kind of people hams are.
We are launching a campaign which is intentionally going to be very friendly, very open, and celebrating the friendships and the fun that can be happening on amateur radio.
Pitts, who has a background in psychology, says he put together a simple exercise, which he administered to groups to test his theory that people really couldn't put a face on amateur radio.
I had a set of flashcards built up, kind of like the kind school children used, and each one had a different activity or occupation on it. And I would ask the groups not to tell me what the person looked like, but what their personality was. And there were teachers and ministers and lawyers and carpenters. The last card was amateur radio operator or ham radio. And it was interesting. The groups could always tell me what they imagined the personality of each of these people was until we got to the last card.
So Pitt says he came up with a basic mission.
The Hello campaign is designed to create the image of amateur radio being friendly and being able to make friends through amateur radio around the country and indeed around the world.
To attract a wider audience, Pitt says he needed a hook or an event to help draw attention. He found it in the 100th anniversary of the first voice transmissions over radio.
Christmas Eve 1906, a guy named Reginald Fessenden, who normally was transmitting in Morse code weather reports to ships up and down the East Coast. The radio operators aboard the ships had been told to expect something unusual, but nobody expected what he was about to do. And what he was able to do was to actually broadcast and say hello and wish them Merry Christmas. He played a violin. He played some off the Edison cylinder phonograph. His wife was supposed to talk, but the wife got mic fright. But it was the very first broadcast of voiceover radio.
Pitt says the campaign is now relying on those on the front line in amateur radio who can and do deal with the public.
We've prepared an incredible set of tools for the public information officers, group leaders, club leaders, other hams, to be able to take to their local television and radio stations, newspapers, and promote amateur radio.
Those tools include bumper stickers, brochures, buttons, a series of radio public service announcements, video clips for television, and a website. And while the first goal of the campaign is to raise public awareness, Pitt says there is another motive.
Bring interested people into contact with their local amateur radio groups or a ham. The way you make a new ham is through some relationship with a person who already is a ham. And on the special website, which is www.hello-radio.org, O-R-G, one section there is specific to bring people into contact with local groups who have either special service clubs or mentoring groups or groups that have said that, yes, they absolutely do want to have new people referred to them, and they will give them a warm welcome and a hello.
I'm Mark Abramovich, NT3V, in Philadelphia.
The Hello campaign began March 15th and will climax with the centennial of the very first radio broadcast during all of Christmas week. More information is on the Hello campaign's website, www.hello-radio.org.
That wraps up another edition of This Week in Amateur Radio International. Be sure and be with us next week here on WBCQ on 7.415 MHz at this same time for another edition of This Week in Amateur Radio International. This Week in Amateur Radio International is produced by an all-volunteer amateur radio staff and originates from Albany, New York. If you'd like to get in touch with us, or if you have previous broadcast experience and would like to join our air staff as a news anchor or special segment producer, please get in touch with us via email. Our address is w2xbs@twiar.org. If you would like to write to us, our address is This Week in Amateur Radio International, P.O. Box 30, Sand Lake, New York 12153. If you would like to advertise on future editions of This Week in Amateur Radio International, please call our sales department at area code 518-283-3665 or via email to adsales@twiar.org. If you missed some of today's program, it is available, along with our North American Amateur Brand News Service, at our website for download or podcast subscription. Visit us on the web at www.twiar.org for more information. This Week in Amateur Radio International is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike license. Now for the staff and crew of This Week in Amateur Radio International, I'm Star Donovan, N2JPC, saying 73s until next week.
I'd say that was a pretty successful broadcast.
This recording will self-destruct in 5 seconds.
Bye, David. Good night, Chet.
You're still here? It's over. Go home.
This is WBCQ, the planet.
Pumping out 1 million kilowatts of power.
1 million kilowatts power.
Yes, sir.
Becker Broadcast Systems.